Guys, welcome to the J. Scott Outdoors podcast. I want to get right to this episode. Before we do, I want to thank you guys for listening to this podcast. Want to let you know the best way to reach out to me is probably an email at jscottoutdoors@gmail.com or through my Instagram account at jscottoutdoors. Just send me a direct message. I want to thank GoHunt.com. They are the title sponsor and have been since the inception of my podcast in 2015. You guys know Cody Nelson, my friend, the glassing guru, the optics authority. They're the optics manager at GoHunt.com. If you guys have any optics needs, any tripod, any glassing questions, you can reach out to Cody directly at 602-399-3699. You can text or call him. That is his cell phone. You can also reach him at 702-847-8747. You can email optics@gohunt.com. Make sure to always use, whether ordering online or if you're calling and call Cody direct, use the J. Scott promo code. You're going to get a 10% discount. Also, you get a 10% discount at the Go Hunt Insider, which has incredible mapping now with the Go Hunt maps. It also has amazing draw odds and strategy articles, which is super important this spring going into application season. Go check it out, gohunt.com/jscott. And if you use the J. Scott promo code, you're going to get a $50 Go Hunt gear shop gift card when you sign up just by using the J. Scott promo code. I also want to thank Kuyu Ultralight Hunting. I've been using Kuyu gear since 2010 when the company started. They're based out of California. My late friend Jason Harrison was the founder of that company, and since Jason's passing, the company has just continued to push the bar of excellence and innovation. Go to Kuyu, that's KUIU.com. You can order. It's a direct-to-consumer website. They also have a retail store in Dallas, Texas, as well as the headquarters in Dixon, California. Go to Kuyu, KUIU.com, to order. I also want to thank Phonescope.com. Cheston and his guys over there at Phonescope make the best digiscoping adapters for your binos or for your spotting scope. Use the JScott24 promo code and get a 10% discount on all orders. Guys, let's get right to this episode. Again, I appreciate you tuning in, and God bless. Guys, welcome to the J. Scott Outdoors podcast. I've got my friend Jeff Lester of Hunt Hard Outfitters. Jeff, how you doing?
Great, Jay. How are you?
Good. It's been a while since I've talked to you. We've got a New Mexico deadline coming up here March 20th, so we're a couple of weeks away. And yes, I wanted to get you on the line to discuss these New Mexico hunt applications. Before we get to that, how's everything going with you?
Great. Just raising kids and trying to kill animals. That's the story of my life.
You bet. For those of you that don't know Jeff, he lives in eastern Arizona, right on the New Mexico line, and is an outfitter in Arizona and New Mexico. I've had him on the podcast a bunch. He's been a popular guest, so I wanted to have him on this morning to talk about these New Mexico applications. As we dive into this, Jeff, are there any new changes or anything that you need to bring to light for people that are looking at applying for New Mexico?
No, there's nothing new. The system is still the same that it's been for quite some years. There's nothing new. You know, there are some things that have been in effect for quite some time, but people are finding out about them more and more now. In the guided, they have that 2-day guided pull. A lot of guys are starting to find out about that. And, you know, it's for some outfitters, you know, I'm not a big fan of it. I think it hurts, you know, the draw and the outfitted guided draw. Obviously it's intended or I guess I shouldn't say it's intended. It's a, guys are using it as a loophole to get into the guided pool to get those better odds, which, you know, of course I understand that, why they're doing that, but it really hurts the outfitters and what, you know, our intentions are is to, you know, to draw hunters in the units that we hunt. But when somebody takes one of those tags from the 2-day hunt, you know, it there's only so many tags to really go around, and, you know, a piece of the pie just gets smaller and smaller every year. So that's one of the, you know, in my opinion, that's an issue, you know.
So in New Mexico, just to clarify for the listeners, there's basically two draws, right? There's a general draw that you just draw and you can go hunt on your own. And then there's an outfitter pool or draw that gives you a little bit better odds if you apply with an outfitter. But then you have to hunt with that outfitter. But what you're saying is there's a little bit of a loophole in that guys are trying to actually draw with the outfitter but then not hunt with the outfitter. Is that what you mean?
Yeah, so you want me to explain it?
Yeah.
Okay, so in New Mexico, we're going to use some easy numbers here to explain this. And obviously, we're just doing this for the podcast to explain, you know, how the system works. So let's just take 100 tags. If there were 100 tags in a given unit, we're using 100 because it's easy to do the math. So 16 of the 100 tags are going to go to non-residents. 10%, which are 10 of those tags, are going to go to the outfitted pool, and 6 of the tags, 6%, are going to go to any out-of-stater that puts in without having a signed contract. He's basically putting in on his own, and he's going to go hunt on his own. It doesn't mean that he still can't hire an outfitter if he drew in that pool. If he drew in that pool and later on he wants to hire an outfitter, he can do that. So 16% of the tags are going to non-residents. So 10% in the outfitted pool, 6% in the, I guess you could say, non-resident, you know, self-guided or do-it-yourself pool. Now, the 10% pool, you have to have a signed and dated contract prior to applying for any hunt through an outfitter. And basically that contract is stating the agreement and saying that you are going to basically hunt with that outfitter. By law, if you sign that contract, you have to hunt with that outfitter unless arrangements have been made that you're going to do a contract reassignment. And what that would be is, like, you know, there's a lot of people out there that are, you know, run application, obviously, you know, application businesses or services to put people in. So they might use one outfitter number and then they do what they call a contract reassignment. So they can give it, say, a person that puts in with somebody says, hey, I want to hunt with a different outfitter or whatever. That's already predetermined. He can then get a contract reassignment to hunt with another outfitter if that guy has already agreed to let him go. So an easy way to look at that is, say a certain outfitter is known for sheep. So say he puts in with Hunt Hard Outfitters and he said, well, I have an agreement, so I might call that outfitter and just say, hey, we're putting him in. We're applying a guy and he wants to hunt sheep with you because you hunt this specific unit. If he draws that unit, is it okay if we put him in, but then we're going to do a contract reassignment to so that he can hunt with you in that unit? Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Okay. So, the 10%, of the licenses that are awarded in the guided pool, like I said, you have to have that signed contract dated. That contract is good for 3 years. That we can reapply that person every year until, you know, for the outfitter draw. And, you know, if you look at statistics, the guided draw obviously has, you know, much better odds in the guided draw than in the non-resident guided draw. I mean, non-resident drawing odds, you know? So that's pretty much how it works. The two-day deal is the guided pull two-day elk hunt, or not elk hunt, but hunts. You know, I think the reason that hurts the draw is because, say, let's just take, say, a unit that has six tags that are going to be awarded in the outfitter draw. And say there's outfitters out there that are running, you know, deals. Hey, you give me $1,200, you can put in for this two-day hunt package. The problem with that is you have to have an outfitter or one of his guides with you in the field for 2 days. That's by law. You have to have somebody in the field during your contracted dates of the hunt that you booked. They have to be with you in the field. So a guy can't just draw in the outfitter pool and then pay the outfitter $1,000 and then go hunt. If he does that, he's breaking the law. So he's got to have a guide with him. Now, what some guys are doing in this, or they're just going and getting any old guy with a heartbeat, and they're getting, you know, him to go get a guide license, and he's basically designated just to go and sit and camp with these guys for 2 days, which, you know, I don't know. I mean, I'm opinionated when it comes to this. I think that it really hurts us as outfitters, because if those tags were designated for us to do business in the state of New Mexico, well, it kind of defeats the purpose. You know, because, you know, my good guides aren't getting work, you know, or, you know, it's set up for the do-it-yourselfer is what it's set up for. I mean, that's what people are starting to use it for, which I see their point. I mean, they're trying to get better draws. Everybody's always looking for the angle. I get it. But, you know, I'm pretty against it, the way it works, you know?
Yeah. It seems like it mucks up, quite a bit there. Okay, so that's kind of there's no bonus points in New Mexico, and literally you could draw 1 year and draw the next year and draw again, or you could.
Yeah, it's a complete luck of the draw state. No bonus points. You have, which in today's, you know, in the scheme of things today in the hunting industry, I mean, you're crazy not to apply for New Mexico. I mean, you know, I mean, obviously their numbers have blown up at how many people are applying. But because it's a luck of the draw state, I mean, to throw your name in the hat and to not have to be in their system, like say in Arizona, where, you know, if you haven't been playing the game for years, then your odds, you know, are really tough. I mean, yeah, it's a, you know, throw your name in the hat and, you know, hope for the best, you know. I mean, especially on, you know, your sheep tags and ibex and oryx and some of these, you know, animals that you're not going to kill anywhere else. You know, you don't have to have a lot of vested time in it. You can just, you know, go for it, you know, and see.
Okay. And then do you have to float the application fees and the license? Do you have to buy a license ahead of time? Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah. So, you know, a lot of these states throughout the West obviously have gone to this. They see a big money grab is they're making you buy the license. Okay, used to make it where it was refundable, but now you have to purchase the license, which New Mexico's is really affordable compared to some of the other states. And you do have to purchase your license, but you also have to front your money. So, you know, if you put in for all species, I mean, they're going to be pulling $9,000 off your credit card, and they hold it until, you know, the draw is up. If you don't draw, they put everything back on the card but your application processing fees and the license fee. So it's, you know, like I said, I mean, you know, it's just part of, you know, they're using the money the way they see fit. But, I mean, it's a way for them to make some extra revenue, of course, and making people buy that license, which hardly anybody, I mean, I can't think every state I apply for is doing it now.
Yeah. Okay, you know? Let's talk about the different animals that you hunt in New Mexico, and let's start out with deer, and then any exotics, sheep, anything like that, and then we'll finish with elk.
Okay. So you want to talk exotics first?
Deer first.
Oh, deer. Sorry. So our deer hunts that we do, we hunt obviously around the state. New Mexico has some good deer in a lot of units that are, you know, not on anyone's radar, obviously, but it's just like any other state. The mule deer numbers in the West are down across the board, I would say. I mean, New Mexico has some decent deer hunting, but it's not as a whole going to rival, you know, some of the stuff in Colorado, Utah, Arizona for those really, really, really good units. Now, you know, 2C is a, you know, a famed unit to kill big deer in. It's got terrible draw odds because it has very, very few non-resident deer tags in it throughout, you know, the archery, muzzleloader, and rifle hunts. There's always a couple of really good deer shot in the state. But, you know, most of the time those are obviously, you know, the big, big deer killed on either the auction or raffle tags or, you know, some special hunt tag that they, you know, somebody won or bought. In the general season hunts, you know, most of the state is producing, you know, in the upper end is a 160 to 175 buck is a good buck in the state. 180 plus is getting more and more rare, just due to the fact that their age class is not what it once was. Unit 2B, New Mexico, for years was a really, really, really good unit. We hunt it every year. In the past, it was an awesome hunt. Has definitely gone downhill. We still are very successful in the unit, but we don't kill near the bucks that we used to kill in the hunt. So it's a 160, 170 average top end of the bigger bucks killed. Don't see near as many of those deer as we used to. The resident deer herd that is in that unit has been really beat up as well. The elk have kind of overtaken where the resident deer are. A lot of elk have moved into that unit, and I mean, not moved in, but there's just a lot. The elk numbers are much higher than they used to be. The unit still can produce, you know, the resident deer. There's used to be some really good resident bucks in the unit, but you know, because of cameras and, you know, those big resident deer have been targeted and, you know, they're dead. So, you know, all the years of, you know, building that herd and age class up, it doesn't take long. Once the deer is found and located, it's just a matter of time before, you know, he's going to bite the dust. And so 2B is also, you know, built or, you know, off of a migratory hunt. You get deer that come out of the San Juan, southern Colorado, and they move across the Ute, and then they come into northern New Mexico. If you get the weather, you can see a lot more deer, obviously, on the second and third hunts. The first hunt is pretty crummy in 2B. We don't tend to hunt it because it overlaps our elk season in down in the Gila and different things. And like I said, I mean, you have to, I don't ever oversell our hunts. I try to tell guys, hey, do we kill deer in this unit? Yeah, we kill deer here every year. These are the bucks we're killing. You know, these are the bucks we used to kill in the past. Do we still kill some big deer? Yes. You know, and in today's standards, anything, you know, 165 or better is a good buck. Obviously, it's not a giant buck, but it's a solid buck. You know, and then once the migratory deer come in, you know, they had that youth deer hunt up in 2B for years. And it really took a the unit took a beating in that youth hunt because the youth would go up there and slam, you know, the 180 plus bucks. And I think there was like 150 youth tags, and it was, it really took a toll over those years on those big mature deer. They cut that youth hunt out. I shouldn't say they took it out. They still have it. It's much, I think they take, I can't remember the exact numbers, 25, I think, is what they came down to from 150. And then they moved the tags into the first rifle hunt in the general season, which success rates are, you know, nothing, not nothing compared to what they once were, because they were hunting them in the rut. So anyway, the rest of the state and stuff down like in the Gila or the units that we hunt or throughout the, you know, eastern portion of New Mexico, I mean, there's good deer in a lot of units. If you do your homework and you go and, you know, scout and you really spend the time, I mean, you can find a good buck in most every unit in the state. But it's not like you're just going to go and be passing up, you know, big buck after big buck to kill a giant. It's those days are kind of gone. So
what about your private land hunts for deer?
Private land hunts, depending on, I mean, if you do your homework and you find a place that is, you know, selling them and they have private land, I mean, sometimes that can be good. I mean, I know that there's places on the eastern side of the state that have some pretty solid deer numbers as well as the southern part of the state. I just tell people, you know, if the ranch you're hunting or the private land you're hunting, you know, it needs to be a very large piece of property to probably hold good deer numbers. If it's a small place, not to say you can't kill a big deer or a good deer on a small place, that happens as well. It's just kind of a, but if you're spending the money with an outfitter, you're going to want to do your homework. You know, I had a guy, one of my clients, you know, had a guy tell him that, you know, they were killing these big deer on this piece of private, and he went and hunted it, and it was a terrible hunt. Said he didn't hardly see any deer. And, you know, there's those guys out there that are just going to, that are looking to just cash your check. And, you know, so you need to do your homework, really see what the outfitters produced, maybe, you know, talk to maybe some people that have hunted the property, try to get some references. I mean, you know, most of the time, if you do your due diligence, you'll find the truth, or if it's good or if it's bad.
Sure. What about coos deer in New Mexico?
Coos deer, obviously in the last few years has really come on strong. A lot of people are more interested in it. You know, it's caught a lot of traction. The state has some great deer. It doesn't have near the units that say an Arizona does. But it does have some really good coos deer opportunities, and there are some outfitters that have killed some really, really good bucks and do really well at it. So, you know, same thing, you know, do your research. You know, if you're looking for that 80 to 100 inch deer, New Mexico's a state you can easily go kill those kind of bucks in. If you're looking for that next level, there are some units that will produce that 100 to 110 inch deer and maybe even bigger. Most of those units will have some really big deer in them, but some of that stuff is really hard access, really tough country to hunt. There is big coos in a lot of the units, but it's not going to be, you're going to earn the big deer. I mean, there's just some really physically demanding country in some of where the big, big coos live.
And they're also in the thick stuff too. The big ones typically are in the thicker brush where you can't glass them as well, right?
Yeah, correct. In some of those units. But, you know, a lot of the country that holds a lot of the really big coos, you know, New Mexico's had a lot of really big fires in the last 10 years. A lot of country's been burned off. You know, it's the same thing with the elk, obviously, like Arizona. You know, we get these big burns, and at first it's really, really good, obviously great for the animals. But in the end, the burns really hurt some of the units because there's no cover for a lot of the game. And with these long-range rifles and stuff that people are shooting, and the technology that we have in hunting is, you know, things have been picked over. So the age classes have been kind of hammered on due, you know, where these big burns are. So.
Gotcha. Okay. Let's shift into exotics. And then let's talk about elk.
Okay. So exotics, you know, we've got oryx, very popular. It's gained a lot of traction as well. All the draw odds for any, you know, the exotics have gotten way tougher. Everything's gotten more popular. The reason why is because people want to go hunt. And, you know, people are finding out, hey, I'm going to go hunt something. You know, I might not be hunting deer. I might not be hunting elk because I didn't get drawn. So a lot of guys are like, hey, we're taking the best opportunity we can at all these different species, and we're at least going to throw our name in the hat and try. And so that's what, you know, the exotic craze has happened in New Mexico, is everybody's like, hey, I'm going to throw my name in the hat. So oryx, you know, you have the White Sands Missile Range, or, you know, very tough odds, super, you know, excellent hunting if you can get one of those tags. Then you have your off range hunts, obviously a lot tougher, but, you know, still, if you go and hunt and do your due diligence, you know, they're high success rates if you can get one of those tags. Fun animal to hunt, excellent eating, some of the best wild game meat you'll eat. You got Barbary sheep. You know, Barbary sheep has gotten very, very popular. I mean, you know, especially in Texas and different things where you can get, you know, private land hunts. You know, they used to sell for $3,500 and now they're up to $7,500 for a private land hunt or something like that. I mean, they've gotten very popular for another game animal to go hunt. So there is some good opportunities there. They did add some hunts, and they added some tag numbers. And in my opinion, it's only a matter of time before they really hurt, you know, the numbers of the sheep, of the Barbary sheep, because they're, in my opinion, they're killing too many of them, and they're kind of banging up their age class as well. So it's getting tougher and tougher to kill big rams. Doesn't mean you still can't go kill a big ram. I'm not saying that, but it's, the numbers are definitely taking a beating, because they added, you know, a lot more tags, and the hunting pressure has just gotten a lot tougher for barb. Ibex, you know, down in the Floridas, awesome hunt. You know, numbers have plummeted due to, you know, they killed way too many ibex a few years ago, or whatever they had done. You know, we had a hunter last year on an ibex hunt. He was an older individual, had a great time with him. Very tough to get him up on the mountain. I think he shot at 9 different billies. Didn't kill. Actually pretty impressed with the hunt still. I mean, we still saw some really good billies, but it's definitely not what it once was. So, you know, if guys have ever been on those hunts with family or friends and then gone back 10 years later, it's a whole nother ball game down there. But another hunt opportunity, if you want to throw your name in the hat, cool animal to hunt, and there's no other place in the state you're going to kill one. So, pretty cool deal, you know? Yeah, so that's it for exotics, you know? And like I said, you know, there's no other place you're going to do it. You're not, you know, I mean, other than, I guess, you know, there's probably some high fence opportunity or stuff in Texas that has, right, you know, some of these same species, but, you know, not going to be a free range, you know, hunt like you're going to get, you know, in New Mexico. And not that you can't go to Texas and hunt free range oddad. Obviously that there's some really good free range hunts in Texas, you know, on private ground.
Okay, before we get into elk, talk a little bit about last year's conditions and then where we stand in this year's conditions going into New Mexico elk season, you know, with the draw being right here, coming off last season, conditions going in, and then we can dive into specifics on elk.
Okay. Conditions. Let's take last year. We had some record snowfall. You know, 30-year record snowfall in Arizona and New Mexico last year. We had really, really, really good conditions for winter snow. So our snowpack was really high. And then coming off of that, we had kind of a terrible monsoon. And so, but there was a lot of feet on the ground. Horn growth was where it should be. I think this year, much of the Gila and, you know, that stretch that runs, you know, all the way diagonal up through New Mexico has probably caught a higher snowpack maybe than they had last year. Now, over here on this side of Arizona where I live, we don't have the snowpack that we had last year. We have had some pretty solid, you know, weather. And then it big spans of dry weather as well, you know, and a big thaw. Like right now, we've been in a big thaw because it's been very warm for this time of year. New Mexico, I was just talking to a couple of my guides in New Mexico, and we think that the snowpack across most of what we hunt is higher than it was last year. So I've heard that the snowpack's 120%. So I think they're a little above average. Now, I'm not a meteorologist, so don't quote me on anything what I'm saying, people. I just I see it from, you know, driving around. We're looking at the snow on the mountain. Hey, it looks like it's heavier than last year. You know, I was just down towards the Gila of a week ago, came through there, coming from southern Arizona, and you know, certain parts of the Gila looked like it had heavy snow compared to last year. So that's just what I'm gauging that off of.
So with that being said, if we have a good monsoon, it could be a really good elk year is what you're saying?
Yeah, I mean, let's talk about that. So I always say that elk, the winter really dictates horn growth for elk. Deer, maybe the monsoon, because they're a little later and they finish off a little different. You know, they're holding, they don't rub out till, you know, a month and a half after the, you know, elk, or, you know, sometimes 2 months in some areas. So there's a big difference there. I think the elk really, the good winter, you know, I think in Arizona, let's just take, you know, we saw that fabulous horn growth in Arizona last year. There were some really big bulls killed. And you look at the areas that those bulls were killed in, you know, that northern part of Arizona, like 9 and 10, look at what it pumped out. But it was, man, the feed was off the hook in northern Arizona last year. And we had big bulls. And, you know, this side of the state, we were still good. We, you know, New Mexico, you know, I don't know. I think age class goes right hand in hand with horn growth. You know, people are always thinking like, oh, well, we didn't have, you know, big bulls. Well, if you're looking at a 4-year-old bull, well, he's probably what he should be. If you're looking at an 8-year-old bull, well, that's different. You know, I mean,
so what you're saying, you know, is it good conditions, but New Mexico's age class continues to suffer.
Yes. But to back that up, let's take the primitive weapons units. So they made a change. They took the scopes away, which I love this. Okay. The primitive weapons units. And if for your listeners that don't understand this, for years, we have primitive weapon units, they called them. So you know, in the country that I hunt, unit 15, 17, 13, primitive weapons. Okay. The Gila rifle archery. Okay, so the Gila units, the 16s, 23, 12s, different units are rifle. So the primitive weapons units, for years, you know, back in the day when they were shooting flintlock, and, you know, and then inlines came in, and you had archery and you had muzzleloader. That was it. It was called a primitive weapons unit. What has happened is over the years, obviously technology, next thing you know, we're banging bulls 300, 400, 500. The technology kept getting better and better with these inline muzzleloaders, the optics, the turrets, the range finders, everything. So what people need to understand is New Mexico Game and Fish, you know, it was never intended for these units to be shooting bulls at that kind of distance and stuff with these muzzleloaders, because they basically have become single shot rifles. Okay. Mm-hmm. So what did they do to combat it? They did it about 10 years too late, but at least they did something finally, because our age class and numbers of elk have plummeted in some of those units due to the fact that the success rates were high for years. So they took the scopes away. Now everybody's crying, oh my gosh, I've got to actually go hunt now. I can't just set up. I see a bull at 300. I can't just lay down, you know, pull my bipods out and hammer him. I mean, people, you have to hunt. And it's going to greatly increase the quality, because the success rates are going to come down. Okay, everybody was so worried, oh, they're going to wound so many bulls, they're going to do this and that. No, that's not true, because most guys won't even take the shot because they can't hit them anyway. Mm-hmm. So people know, you know, if I can get in 150 to 210, 220, 250, you can make a good solid shot on a bull. And so it's making people have to hunt harder. Okay, which I love that idea. You know, now it hurt my business because I usually take a certain amount of muzzleloader hunters every year. And last year I took a third of what I normally take, because there was a mass exodus out of muzzleloader hunters. I mean, they left in droves. I mean, I couldn't even get rid of some of my landowner tags because people just didn't want to get on the iron sight deal and go do it. Okay. This year I'm seeing a little bit of, you know, people are kind of coming back and saying, well, hey, I'm saying, hey man, draw has almost doubled in some of these units, with muzzleloaders. Okay. And what people don't understand is the rifle units, they went the other direction. So if you had a unit that was 2 or 3% draw odds with a rifle, well, you're down to 1% or 0.5% draw odds, because everybody that didn't want to go muzzleloader now is switching over to rifle. And the muzzleloader units, you know, they kind of doubled. So if a unit was 6 or 5%, now it's 10%. If it was 8%, it might be 16%. I mean, it's really shot up. But if you look at the numbers in statistics, hunt success obviously is going to go down because people aren't killing them at the ranges they were killing them. Now, I like to explain to people, if you look at any kill statistics for muzzleloader or rifle hunts or anything, if you see, hey, this hunt had 18% hunt success, okay, that's the general public or the general hunt as a whole. Most outfitters, if you're hunting with a good outfitter, his success rates are going to be obviously much higher than that, because that's what they do. You know, my hunt success in a lot of our units, you might have 20% hunt success, but most of the hunts we're hunting, we're having, you know, 75 to 80% hunt success, because, you know, it's what we do. I mean, we're going to go out, we're going to get you close, we're going to, you know, we're going to, you know, get the bull killed or whatever. I'm just saying, it's sometimes if you're hunting with the right guys, I mean, now is our hunt success what it was in muzzleloader? No. I mean, we're still, last year we probably killed, I'm guessing 50 to 60% hunt success on muzzleloader hunts. You know, I know outfitters that were setting water with their muzzleloader hunters, which I would never do. I just, you know, I'm a big, like, I'm really anti, you know, water hole. So
you like to run and gun?
Yeah, I like to run and gun. I want to go hunt. I'm not saying I've never put a guy in a water hole, so I don't want people to think I'm on a high horse that way. I'm just saying, you know, I've set water myself personally. I'm not saying I've never done that ever. You know, I just, it's, you know, I got a gun in my hand. You know, we're going to go out and we're going to pursue the bulls and we're going to hunt, you know, and try to get it done, you know, on the ground. And it's just, you know, much more of a hunt for me. And most people I know are, you know, agree with that. So, but these muzzleloaders, they're flat shooting. You know, if you really spend the time behind the muzzleloader, I mean, I've gotten, you know, I'm consistent 200 to 350. I can consistently shoot, you know, 15 inch groups with an open sight. But I spend, you know, time knowing my drop and understanding my gun. And, you know, it's, you know, the gig. It's how well do you know your weapon? If you know your weapon and you know what it does and you know your drop and you understand all that, then you can be very successful and you can be, it can be a great hunt. You know, just people need to understand that you need to practice and take that time to do that, you know?
Okay, so what you're saying, though, is with the muzzleloader changes, that might help the age class by taking the scopes away and making hunters a little less efficient.
Yes.
Some people wandered away from muzzleloader, but you're seeing them come back because now the draw odds have gotten better.
Last year was the first year. But, you know, if you look at, let's just take a four-year-old bull. So if he was four last year and he made it through the hunts, if he can make it another couple years, because the success rates are going to come down. Like right now, we don't know what the success rates were. We do know what the draw was because that's out there. But once all the harvest reports are turned in off of this draw cycle and everybody sees we'll be able to see next year the kill statistics off of this year being the first year that the scopes were gone. And once that happens, you're going to see it's going to be low. A lot of the kill statistics are going to be very low. You know, the success rates probably, I mean, I'm guessing we're cut in half in some units. But, you know, people need to understand that if you guys want good quality to hunt, and obviously the opportunity, I get that, but you're out there, you have that opportunity. But if you want good quality animals to hunt, they're going to have to combat technology somehow, some way. You know, and I give New Mexico props for at least trying something, you know. I mean, Arizona just seems like they keep going the other direction. They're just pounding some of these units. And it's sad because the herd is taking a beating in Arizona in some units due to, you know, these late rifle hunts that have burned off. And, you know, I look at 27 in Arizona and it's just a mirror image of what it once was. You know, they have done just that unit. No, you know, they haven't done it any favors. It's just pound, 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 pound every bull that we can.
Right.
And it's taken a beating, you know? And so at least New Mexico's trying to do some stuff. I've heard that there's some serious outcry from the residents and people saying we want our scopes back. And I just tell those people, hey, man, just do your homework, get in there, hunt hard, and do the best you can, because it was never intended to be what it's become.
Right.
It was never meant. They had those primitive weapons units. And you take some of those primitive weapons units, back in the day, they were some of the best units in the United States. I mean, Unit 15 was a fabulous unit 25 years ago. I mean, when they was really managed the way it was just an awesome unit. And I'm not saying it's not a pretty good unit now. I mean, it's got a lot of elk, but the age class, like I said, has suffered. But I think it's going to come back, and it'll be a three-year, you know, once we get these 3 and 4-year-old bulls up to 6 and 8, we'll be right back in the mix. We got the genetics. We'll start killing some really good bulls. The rest of the state as well. I mean, you know, look at all the states in the West, you know, Colorado, there's certain places, you know, everybody's kind of going off this, you know, everybody's seen what these muzzleloaders are doing when you put a good optic on them. And you got all these new propellants and new bullets. And, I mean, these guns can just shoot lights out at long range now. It doesn't matter, you know. And the states have to do something to combat that.
You bet. Let's dive into archery. There's two seasons. And talk about the units that you like for archery elk in New Mexico.
Okay. So, archery, you got the 1st through the 14th. And the 15th through the 24th, Okay, so you got a 14-day first season. You got a 10-day second season. Historically, obviously, the second season is more of a, you know, a rut. You're going to catch a lot more rut activity in that second season due to the fact that, you know, the cows are going to be coming into estrus, and this just, that's historically the best time to hunt elk, you know, is in that later part of September for earlier part of October. The 1st through the 14th, last year was really dry, and, you know, the bulls took a beating off water holes. I mean, every bull that was killed in that country, almost every bull, especially the good bulls that you hear about, were shot off water. I mean, very few bulls were killed on the ground in that 1st through the 14th hunt last year. The second part, you know, for 15th through the 24th, predominantly, you know, your guys are wanting to hunt the, you know, the solid rut. They're getting in there and hunting that. The units that, you know, are on everybody's radar, you know, your 16 units in the Gila are historically everybody, that's what everybody raves about. Because, you know, for years, that's where the bigger, the best bulls were killed. Now, all I'm going to say to that is it's definitely living off its past reputation. I'm not saying you can't go to those units and kill a good bull. They are definitely still great units to hunt. But if you hunted the Gila 15 years ago or 10 years ago, and you go there today, it is a, you're going to be shocked at the amount of elk you'll see and the action you will get versus what you had the last time you hunted it. And the fact is a lot of these areas have burned. The rifle hunts have picked over the big age class bulls. You know, when we were hunting the big gov bull 2 years ago, we killed this 420 bull with the gov hunter. And that bull, we had 10 other really nice big 365, 370 plus bulls found while we were hunting that bull in one unit. In 2 years, all 10 of those bulls are dead.
Wow.
All 10 of them. And the fact is those, that area where has been opened up due to burns, and those bulls, after they rut, pull back onto some of those big faces and stuff, and they're glassable, and they've taken a beating. And so much of those units, you know, and they did have a couple of tag reductions in some of those units. You know, a couple of them had some, you know, they've cut a few tags and things in those units. But, you know, if you look at the numbers of a unit in the Gila, I mean, let's just take, for instance, you know, a 16D, which is a very popular unit, but it's one of the tougher units to draw in the state. In the non-resident drawing odds, you've got 1 in 464 for first rifle. Okay? So 1 in 460 tags. And then in the guided pull, you're 1 in 295 or 1 in 300. I mean,
wow.
You're talking some serious steep draw odds. Okay? Now, obviously, if you see really, 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 really tough draws, that's probably because it's a really, really, really good hunt. Okay? I always say, you know, draw odds go hand in hand with the most popular best units, you know, because you can flip right over.
An easy to draw unit, your red flag should go up that, you know, there's a reason it's an easy to draw, easier to draw.
Yeah, but I wouldn't say necessarily, you know, a red flag should go up. You know, you can go right, like, let's take a unit 13, for example, another unit we hunt. In that same week that we just read off, you're 1 in 33. Okay? And it's not that that's a bad hunt. It's a great hunt. It can be a great hunt. But it just doesn't get the traction. Obviously, that's a muzzleloader hunt, and the other one was a rifle. So do you see what we're doing here? Like, yeah. Muzzleloader 1 in 33. In the guided pool, you know, 16D, you're 1 in 295. I mean, that is craziness when you think of that, when you think of the draw odds that we're talking about, you know. So if you really look and pay attention, you know, if people, you know, obviously, you know, you understand the go hunt, you know, and you get in there and look at these statistics and you see what the numbers are. I mean, just because you see like higher draws, don't necessarily equate that into a bad hunt. Okay. I hunt some hunts that have great draw odds, that have great hunting. Okay. The, you know, maybe not everybody wants to go do it. I get that. But, and it's not on everyone's radar. But don't always, you know, do what everybody's doing. I mean, if guys want to be really successful, I mean, I've made a career out of going to the units that nobody wants to hunt and killing big bulls. And I've done that, you know, and I've had a lot of people follow me to those units because they're like, well, where's he killing some of these bulls? Well, I got tired of trying to draw 1 in 500. So I went to the units that are 1 in 30, and I'm still killing big bulls in those units. But you got to do your homework. You got to work hard. You got to go in there and get after it. And, my dad used to tell me, you know, when I went, if you're going to learn an area really good and you'll be successful. As long as you learn that area, learn it, learn to hunt it. Doesn't matter if it's not on everyone's radar. You'll be successful there. You'll kill animals because you're doing something that someone else isn't.
You bet.
And, you know, and a lot of the state is based off of that. You know, there's like the mule deer we talked. If, you know, I killed a really good buck in a unit that has hardly any deer last year. I killed a good buck myself personally. And I killed it in a unit that I like to hunt. It's not a very good unit for deer, but I killed a really good buck in it. I mean, he ain't a giant, you know, he's a 170s buck. But, you know, I went and hunted in a place and I saw literally one buck in my hunt and I killed it. And it was the one I was looking for. It was the buck I wanted to kill. So, you know, it's, you know, your time and effort and, you know, what you put into something, you're going to get back. And so don't be, now some of the stuff up north, I mean, you want to do your homework. There are some units that have bad, you know, that have good draw odds and they probably have some terrible hunting. I'm not saying just go hunt any unit because it's, you know, but, you know, do your homework. You know, the outfitters that people book with, if they hunt the unit and they're successful, you know, that's really what you need to look at. You've got to see, I have guys every day that call and say, hey, I want to put in for the Gila rifle. I get that. You know, that's what everybody wants. They want those primo hunts. The problem is I applied a pile of people in those hunts last year and literally drew no hunters. I drew 5 elk hunters last year in the state of New Mexico. Everything else I did off a landowner tag, or people came in and booked off tags that they drew themselves, or I had contract reassignments from other outfitters that wanted me to take guys in other units. And we ran a pretty skeleton crew last year in New Mexico due to the fact that the draw is getting tough. It's tough. I mean, if I didn't even draw 3% of what I applied. I mean, it was, I can't believe the numbers. I mean, it is tough to draw sometimes in the state. There's no bonus points, you know, and sometimes you'll do good. I mean, I've drawn 20 hunters in a year with the same amount of people I put in. So, you know, who's going to hit the lottery? It's a lottery. So, we every year it's getting tougher to run a business off of that with those numbers because you know you want to keep your guides busy and things, and there's a lot of outfitters. There's more and more outfitters. On the Gila there used to be, I think back in the day there used to be like 11 or 12 permitted outfitters on the Gila National Forest, and now there's like 45 or something.
That's amazing.
And, you know, if you look at if you pull the outfitter list from New Mexico, I haven't checked, and like I said, don't quote me on numbers. I know that there's like 500, 600 registered outfitters in the state of New Mexico. Arizona's all, you know, pretty much, you know, it has, I think it's got four plus registered outfitters, 400 or something. I mean, or maybe that's guides. I could be, you know, like I said, I'm not New Mexico. The outfitter deal versus Arizona is completely different because you just have to have a guide license in Arizona, where New Mexico, you actually have to be a licensed permitted outfitter. And the guide is different. So, but there are a lot. I mean, it's a massive amount of people are, you know, doing it. And there's a lot of guys that do it full time, and there's a lot of guys that do it part time. And, you know, the piece of pie is always the same. The slices are the same every year, but we're getting less and less slices because there's more and more people taking a slice.
You bet.
So it's getting tough to run, you know, a really, really good business due to the fact that, you know, everybody's taking a piece of the pie, which, hey, it's America, and the Forest Service and the Game of Fish has allowed, you know, this to be this way. You know, it's not like Colorado or, you know, Montana or these places where you have to have an allotment or a concession or an area and you actually own it. You know, if you want to be an outfitter in the state, you can hang a tile and say, hey, I'm an outfitter.
Right.
And, you know, I always tell guys it's like, you know, a McDonald's on four corners. All four corners have a McDonald's on it. We all serve a Big Mac. Which one's better? Well, you're going to have to eat the Big Mac to see. And that's a tough deal with 1% draws in a lot of hunts. So
that's a great analogy. I hadn't thought of it like that, but that's a great,
you know,
analogy.
You've got to, you know, are outfitters all compared equally? No, not in my opinion, not in any way, shape, or form. Find the guys that have consistently produced, done good. Does that say that there's not a new guy that's coming on that's good? No, there's some excellent outfitters that are new. I'm not saying that. But you better do your homework, because there are a lot of crooked people in this business. There are people that will cash your check, and many of them have no right being outfitters because they just, first off, they just don't have either the business sense or the hunting abilities to do it. And like I said, I'm not saying everybody. I'm just saying that there is a lot of people doing this business now, and there is a lot of people that are doing it for the quick buck. And you know, I try to explain to people, you know, we've went up in our prices because, you know, inflation, fuel, food. We do fully outfitted hunts. You know, the guide only thing has gotten really popular. Hey, do you do a guide only hunt? I hate guide only hunts, but I've had to start doing them because so many people are offering them because they don't want to cook. They don't want to provide a full camp. You know, I've got six toy haulers. I've got piles of gear, stuff. We put full camps in. We have a cook. We have that happen. And, you know, it's, you know, people out there, I used to see it years ago. I'd be at Harrisburg doing a show, and I would look, and I told my wife one time, honey, go book me a whitetail hunt. And she's like, okay. So she walks around for 30 minutes and comes back and says, I don't even know where I'd start because there's 50 whitetail outfitters in here. I said, yep. How do you know? I said, well, there's 25 elk outfitters in here right now from New Mexico. Where do you start? And I just tell guys, you do your homework, you do your due diligence, and, you know, you just don't make a choice because, you know, your gut feeling told you, hey, go with this guy. I mean, you need to do your homework and really find out who you're hunting with, because we're not all created equal. It's just not, it's just a sad fact.
Yeah. I mean, it's like that in a lot of businesses, you know. There's a lot of choices, and when there's a lot of choices, you need to make sure you make a good choice for sure.
That's right.
All right. Well, any last final thoughts about the New Mexico application process this year, or any last-minute thoughts? Tell people how they can get a hold of you if they want to know more about putting in with you as an outfitter, increasing their draw odds. Can you do
so
that now?
With the time that we have, because the 20th being the deadline, in the time crunch that we have, the best thing to do is for us is just to text me or call me direct at 928-245-2668. That's my direct cell line. Call me and or message me on Instagram, which is Hunt Hard Gear. That is our Instagram. That's my Instagram. You know, to contact me directly, because the thing we have to do is, even if you apply yourself under our outfitter number in the outfitter pool, we still have to, by law, have you sign our contract that states you will hunt with us. You have to do that with any outfitter. So if you call an outfitter and he doesn't have you do that and he gives you your number, you're actually breaking the law. So you need to make sure that, you know, you're going about that correctly. Now, if you sign a contract with a guy, but you do not actually put in with him, you're not breaking the law by going to another outfitter. I had a guy call me yesterday and said he put in with another outfitter a couple years ago. Can he switch? Yes, you can switch. You know, you might have to get in. If he's doing your apps for you, you might have to change your username and password on your account. But, you know, you can still switch. It's not, you know, you're going to go to a different unit that someone doesn't hunt. You're going to do that. You know, I think it's common courtesy. You should probably call the guy you've been talking to and tell him, hey, I'm going a different direction. You know, don't leave a guy hanging and wondering and calling you 50 times trying to find out what you've done. You know, just tell him, hey man, I'm looking at some different units that you don't hunt, or I've gone a different direction. That's fine. People tell me, you know, they say that, you know, as so that's pretty much it. You know, I mean, you know, we, of course, that, like I said, you have lots of choices. There's lots of outfitters to look, you know, to look through. So, you know, do your homework. I hate when I hear the horror stories. I get it all the time. You know, people call me and they have a horror story of an outfitted hunt. And the bad outfitters really hurt the good outfitters, because people get really leery of the business. And, you know, at the same time, people need to understand and have the realist. We've talked about realistic expectations so much. You know, understand that it's hunting at the end of the day. There's some things that are beyond people's control. You know, and be smart about it. And, you know, there's not always going to be the outfitter's fault, or, you know, the game of fish or whatever. I mean, you know, you need to be, as a hunter, you need to be prepared. You know, I ask a lot of questions when I talk to a guy on the phone. One of my first questions, how old are you? What do you weigh? How tall are you? What kind of shape are you in? And, you know, I've had a couple guys get a little offended with that. And I just tell them, hey, man, I need to know what you can handle, because we can't go where you can't go. And the only thing we can do to get you be successful is I have to put you in for the right unit. And if I think you can't handle certain units, then I need to know. So, you know, you need to do, you know, your homework on the outfitter, but the outfitter needs to do his homework on the client, because it's important that we understand, you know, every person's basically wants, desires, and needs. And, you know, I'm not just looking to say, hey, call me, we're going to put you in for this hunt. I'm going to ask some questions and we're going to build a file on you and understand, hey, this is what this guy can do. This is what his goals are. And we're going to go from there. I'm just not going to just throw you in the draw just to throw you in the draw because I want to cash your check.
Right on, man. Well, thanks for spending a good hour with us here and having a good conversation. And I appreciate you all the years coming on the podcast and sharing here with me and the listeners, and encourage the listeners to reach out to you and talk with Jeff more about this and more about New Mexico, and just wish you the best of success. Okay, buddy?
Okay. Thanks, Jay, for having us on. Appreciate it.
All right, buddy. God bless. Take care.
You too.
All right.
See ya.